Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Rich Ferguson, L.A. poet, musician, performer, and you are listening to Poet Escape. Welcome, everyone. Today, I am very pleased to offer up a unique treat here on Poet Escape. Today, I'll be featuring a roundtable discussion with a musician, composer, and also my fellow bandmate in the band, We Voice Sing, Bo Blount, and also owner, operator of Rare Bird Lit here in L.A., and shredding guitar player, Tyson Cornell. How are you, gentlemen?
Good.
Doing well.
And to note about Tyson, Tyson joined Bo and me in the studio while we were creating the debut We Voice Sing CD of Wishbones and Gunfire. Sort of the general layout of today's show, I thought we'd play some tracks from the CD, discuss some behind-the-scenes experiences while in the studio, chat about musical influences, maybe talk about some lessons we've learned as a group since recording the CD, the joys and struggles of being a musician, and any other topics that may arise. In a way, this is really all preparation for a party that We Voice Sing will be throwing this Friday night, December 6th, at Molly Malone's in Hollywood. We'll be talking about that more in depth later in the show, but I thought we'd kick things off right now to play a track, one of my favorites, from the We Voice Sing debut CD of Wishbones and Gunfire. This is entitled Everywhere Is Love. That was Everywhere is Love by Wee Boy Sing from their debut CD of Wishbones and Gunfire. Bo, I want to start out with a question for you, actually. With this track, or for that matter, any other track that you create, because I was hoping you could talk a little about your process, about how you go about creating tracks and what your particular process may have been for creating this track for Everywhere is Love.
Yeah, sure thing. I know you remember this, Rich, but those listening probably don't kind of know the backstory on this particular track. I kind of got my start doing kind of the hybrid music, poetry thing a couple years back for another group, and I actually created this track for somebody else, the music, and had sent it along, and he was struggling with it, and I just happened to play it for Rich at rehearsal, and he liked it so much that he kind of wrote the lyric, or at least part of the lyrics on the way home in his car. But like most every track I do, it really all starts with the rhythm for me, which might sound weird since, you know, I'm kind of primarily a guitarist and then everything else is kind of secondary to that. But this one in particular had just almost an industrial kind of vibe to it. And I was a big fan of Rage Against the Machine back in the day, and it just kind of it gave me sort of that feeling, at least from the drums, and kind of came up with that plodding bass line that you hear that's oh so repetitive, but seems to work somehow in it. And then really the guitars were just you know, more noise, more texture, you know what I mean? And really the lyric is what helps shape the final production, which I think is probably true for most stuff that we do, but that's usually where I start. I'll start with drums, as weird as that sounds, and then you know, bass, get the rhythm section where it needs to be, and then probably guitars and any other textural elements, and then at that point I kind of turn it over to Rich and let him do his thing.
Yeah. Now, when you start adding other parts, let's say, to a particular track, do you do that generally after I've given you some a framework of words, or do you kind of listen? Do you sort of step back from your own track at any one point and say, you know, I need to add a particular part here, I need to make it quiet here, I need to make it noisy here? Or how do you go about doing that, adding additional elements to a particular track?
You know, aside from when we were actually in the studio, kind of sitting there with Andrew at Grandma's Warehouse and kind of coming up with things on the fly, I'd say that the track is mostly fully formed by the time you hear the first note of it. And then if we decide to tear it down later on and maybe add things, that can happen. But I'd say that's a lower percentage of the time. Most of the time, those elements are probably there or at least in my head, and then I'll either mute them, they'll either be actually in the mix, and then I'll drag them real, you know, pretty far down, or I'll, you know, just kind of have those tracks off and then decide as you're sort of doing your thing, you know, what makes sense. Like, and I guess there's always the risk, like you want to just throw more stuff at it and more stuff, but what we've tried to do, or at least I think we aspire to anyway, is to eliminate a lot of the clutter. We want to get to whatever kind of that thread is, you know, that thing that kind of pulls the poetry and represents that in the best light, and then also, you know, lets you kind of give a nod to the music as well. And more often than not, that's kind of a less than more, you know, rather than more proposition. So I throw everything at it, and then it's sort of addition by subtraction. You know, we'll take things out like, oh, you know what, now there's space for this, and, you know, let's pull this back a little bit, and then, you know, now you can hear this, and, oh, what would a shaker sound like here? Or, you know, let's have somebody's girlfriend come in and scream at the top of her lungs, and we'll record it and filter it, and that'll be perfect right here. So it's a mixed bag, you know. I think it's kind of case by case. On this one, I didn't add very much. You know, we kind of went through, and it was already kind of shipped off and in process somewhere else, and we sort of pulled this one back when we realized, hey, we might have something here.
Yeah, and I actually wanted to mention to the audience, earlier Bo mentioned when we were in the studio, Grandma's Warehouse in Echo Park with Andrew, the release of Wishbones and Gunfire, we worked with Andrew Bush, a really talented creative producer over in Echo Park, Andrew Bush, also there were loads of amazing musicians and background vocalists that came in to assist us that I want to give a nod to. The amazing Butch Norton, who actually was on an earlier episode of Poet Escape, who was co-founder of Eels. He's currently playing with Lucinda Williams and Chop Love Carry Fire, all kinds of great bands. Butch played live drums in the studio. Peter Atanasoff, an amazing guitar player, he came in. Some vocals by Liz Foster, Crystal Lane Swift, and I believe didn't your wife even step in at one point and offer some background vocals for one of the tracks or something?
She did. You know, anybody who's out there knows that, you know, as you're sort of throwing a production together, you know, you always forget that one thing. You know, maybe you had a session player in there and you had it written down, like, oh, I need to get this one part, and you just kind of get swept away with what's happening, and at least that's what happened to me. And I realized, you know, the night before we were going to mix it down, and, you know, we only had the studio for like 4 or 5 days, and then we were out. I realized I was missing a part that I originally wanted Liz Foster to sing, and we just never got around to it. She just kind of was riffing, and all of it was so amazing. We're just like, oh, let her go, and we never circled back. And so, yeah, one night I set up my, you know, in my little project studio, I set this section up to loop and just sort of sent my wife in there and said, you know, go in and sing this part over and over and over, and then come out when you think you got it. And she did that a couple of times, bless her. And, you know, I think it came out great. So, yeah, she's on the record as well, and, you know, it was kind of a family thing for me all the way around, so.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people that are on the record, Tyson Cornell, who's also with us. Tyson, you played, you were gracious enough to step in and really just do some phenomenal playing on the CD. You've been also joining us live. You'll be playing with us live this Friday. I was hoping you could maybe talk about how you approach these tracks when you came into the studio or when you play with us live, how you approach these tracks with your playing and how that might be similar or different to how you might approach other musical situations that you've been involved with.
Well, thank you, Rich. Yeah, this, you know, we voicing is definitely a lot different than anything that I've played before. It's not necessarily different than stuff that I listened to, but it was the first time that I'd ever played without a drummer, a live drummer.
Right.
And the tone is a lot different. You know, I've always really played in this environment that had a lot of high tones, a lot of presence. And what's really unique about the music in general, aside from it having this hybrid component, is that Bo has created this world of transference, and you know, it's all rhythm pickups, and it's the tone turned down all the way with a lot of delay and really fuzzed out stuff that just adds this ambience and endlessness to it. So that was really unique
right.
for me.
And how about when you either approach what we do or other musical situations when you've been brought in, sometimes maybe just spur of the moment sort of thing, like, hey, Tyson, why don't you come in and, you know, join us for this live show or join us in the studio for this particular track or whatever. What is your process as far as when you're listening to a particular song or a track or something, what your sort of process is for deciding what you will actually play on a track?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it comes down to necessity. It comes down to, you know, what are the bare bone steps that are necessary to make this this sound like music, or make my contribution sound like it needs to fit there. And then you can get creative, and then you can start expanding on style and doing whatever's unique to my playing. But, you know, it starts with really honing in on what it is. And when you're playing with other people, that it can be intuitive. in many ways it has to be, but it's also really just stepping outside yourself and figuring out what the environment is.
Yeah. Now, Tyson, you come from a heavy duty musical background. I know Rare Bird Lit Books, your imprint. You've released a book, on prog rock essays or whatever. So you're definitely well versed in a lot of the music that comes out of prog rock. I'm curious how you got involved with prog rock and how those influences have sort of shaped the way you approach other styles of music when you play.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, prog has always been my fetishistic musical influence. It's the genre and style that I've, until recently, I've never really had peers. And I grew up listening to rock and roll music and jazz and country music and a lot of metal, and that was always relatively cool and accepted from people that I hung around with. Prog was the thing that I was listening to on my own until I voiced that and realized that there were a whole bunch of other people out there that were just as fanatical about it. And I got together and edited a book called Yes is the Answer and Other Prog Rock Tales, featuring 20 essays on progressive rock by Rick Moody, Charles Bach, Peter Case from the Plimsolls, people like
nice.
That. And, I have a really difficult world sometimes with music and books. I mean, I come from a musical family. Both my older stepbrothers are professional musicians. And I grew up from, early years just naturally playing music and being around that stuff. But at heart, I'm a book person. So, I think it's different in many ways where I get up every day, naturally drawn to books or reading, but I use music as this alternate creative outlet.
Yeah. How about you, Bo? What have been some of your big either musical influences or just general creative influences that have helped to shape your artistry?
Oh, my artistry. Wow, you made it sound so, no matter what
your
I
artistry.
Say, it's going to be disappointing after that. I'm at such a disadvantage here with two, literary guys, and, that is totally not my comfort zone, so I'll try not to wreck the car too bad here. But, I'll say it, I'm going to own it. When I grew up, when I started playing guitar, I started when I was 13, and so, metal was huge at the time. So I'm confident that I know probably a lot more metal than is healthy for anyone. And,
mm-hmm.
Along there, dash in some Jimi Hendrix and some of the other things, at least from kind of a guitar standpoint, they were more or less gods, and as I'm 13 years old and I got like my first Strat and I'm trying to figure these things out. I would sit and really anything that was on the radio, if it was catchy at all, I would just sort of sit and tinker with it until, I could figure out whatever the riff was that riff, Don Henley, Boys of Summer. Like when I figured that out, there was just something in that. It was like, oh, song is what it is. But there's something about that, like that finding that thing, whatever it is, that really fueled every step, And so as I got better at guitar, it became, chord progressions that really made sense. And I got heavily into kind of jazz and probably alternative music, whatever that means anymore. So there was a dance element probably early on that seemed maybe incompatible with guitar. And so I was fascinated early on with, how can I make what I do, fit or support, kind of that kind of a beat, just because there was something about it. You go into a club, typically underage, and, there was something about kind of being in that environment. And, the first time I heard the song Nemesis, I was, it was one of those things, like you feel like, oh, the just something about the kick or something about the beat, just it was more you felt it more than you heard it. And so it was something about that fueled kind of everything that I did. And I think I started writing original music, probably around 18, 19. I went through the usual suspects. I was big into the Smiths. I was big into the Cure. It seemed like there for a while, anything British, like I was all over it, whether it was, chill out or techno or it was more guitar-based or whatever. And I'd say of late, big into just trip-hop and just the weirdest kind of stuff. And then every once in a while, there's a group that comes along that does a really cool hybrid thing where they fuse, in my mind anyway, the best elements of kind of a lot of different worlds. And so Massive Attack's on that list for me, 07, and then seeing, players like that live really encouraged me to keep going, to try to find things that worked for me, to find that thread, that thing that's like, this pulls it all together. And so, this project probably grew out of that. I don't know if I answered the question or avoided it all together, but
No.
Let me pose the same one to you, Rich. How about it?
Musical influences. Well, I guess I would have to answer that. It depends on which stage of my musical development. My first instrument was the drums. And at the time I was living on the East Coast and I was taking drum lessons at Drummers Collective in New York City. So I was studying with, this would have been when I was in college at Rutgers, I was taking lessons from all these heavyweight funk and, just really progressive drummers, and they were turning me on to like Tony Williams, Billy Cobham, Terry Bozzio, all these just really Bill Bruford from King Crimson, all these really just tripped out drummers, a lot with technique and different things like that. And so I was listening at that time. I was listening to a lot of those kind of records: Tony Williams, Lifetime, Billy Cobham, a lot of prog myself, because that's where you would find a lot of those drummers and musicians that were just highly technical. And basically when I came out to California from New Jersey, I kind of went from listening to that type of music and approaching drums from that particular way, I think, to more of an organic style. I started listening more to like songwriting, song oriented bands, REM, The Replacements, Husker Du, and bands that I just thought were writing really good songs at the time. And also at that time, my style of drumming was changing. I went from playing a traditional drum set to flipping my bass drum, turning it into a floor tom, and playing all my bass drum parts on that drum and standing up because I was doing a lot of singing. So I went through a radical shift. I was playing in this band, Blue Movie, in San Francisco, and we were kind of like REM meets the Violent Femmes, this sort of thrashy, folky band. And so I was listening to Dylan, to some early Bruce Springsteen. It's funny, I lived in Jersey, and I never listened to Springsteen. It took me coming out to California and moving to San Francisco to actually listen to any Springsteen, but Greetings from Asbury Park and stuff like that. So I was really getting into songwriters then, and how to sort of craft a song and it's something Tyson said earlier, the idea that first and foremost you want to serve the song, no matter what instrument you're playing, guitar, bass, drums. Ultimately, what your job is as a musician is to serve the song and how best to serve the song, and really to not get in the song's way. Because, and I really started to see this after I shifted from playing drums to taking more of a lead role and being sort of like a lead singer or whatever. I became really sensitive to any drummers we brought in the band, because to me, drums are one of those instruments that can sometimes make or break a band. And if you get a drummer that's just flailing all over the place and throwing in fills where there don't need to be fills, it can really, in my mind, destroy a song. So, I just became really hyper aware of you know, how do you serve a, you know, no matter the instrument, how do you best serve a song, and to get out of the song's way and just, and let it have room, let it have breath, and to be bigger than each individual musician. I love that. I love that feeling of going into a rehearsal space and creating a piece of music with a group of people. And you literally get swept away. You literally feel like you become part of something that is so much greater than yourself. And that's one of the things I love about playing in a, being part of a group. I perform a lot of solo spoken word from time to time. But really the thing that really sort of just gets me off, so to say, is playing with a group of musicians in a band, because that is where I feel bigger than myself. And that is just one of the greatest feelings in the world to me. So yeah. And, you know, influences these days, you know, and I've been influenced by a lot of writers because I do a lot of writing, a lot of poets, you know, all kind of fiction writers, whatever. So yeah, so many different influences. Well, speaking of writing and writerly, I thought we might play another track from this CD. And as far as lyrics go, I think this is probably one of my more writerly sort of lyrics on the CD. Definitely one that I can look at and say, yeah, I really like those words a lot. And I know that you like these too, Bo. A track from the CD called I Wait For You. Why don't we go ahead and play that one now?
For those born with a radarless heart, destined to wander in worried circles while others walk a truer, straighter path, I wait for you. I guide you. For those between thoughts, between breath, between life and death, I wait for you. I fill the silences for you. For those who brave the sun, brave the deoxygenated black hole dark, to write epic poems in the vast spaces between glittering stars, I wait for you, I collaborate with you. And for those who voted nihilistic and got their president of nothingness, I wait for you, I dream a better world for you. I dream a better world. Gather fractured raptures, make whole, make one. 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 Make one. For those with all the wars of the world written into the lines around their eyes, I wait for you. I bear that history with you. For those whose lives have been relegated to the B-side of that number one with a bullet track, my gun down life, I wait for you. I write a better song for you. For those who work the graveyard shift in the morgue of melancholy, I wait for you. I work side by side with you. And for those fatal optimists, hope flourishing but cyanide on standby, I wait for you. I offer taste of faith to you. I offer taste of faith. Gather fractured raptures, make whole, make one. 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 But those with atom bombs and ghost towns encoded into their DNA, so that no matter where they go, what they do, shit just keeps blowing up and no one ever stays around for very long. I wait for you, I rebuild for you. And for those who ship their lives off to fictitious addresses, hoping to elude reality once and for all, I wait for you. I pick up that mail for you. And for those who speak from the heart, even when it is broken, knowing that cracked words are better than no words at all, I wait for you. Yeah, I honor you. Gather fractured raptures, make whole, make one.
Gather fractured raptures, make whole, make one. Gather fractured raptures, make whole, make one. Gather fractured raptures, make whole, make one.
That was We Voice Sing with I Wait From You from their debut CD of Wishbones and Gunfire. You know, just speaking for myself as far as the lyrics go for that one, the story behind that, I was, basically I had just been, I had been dumped by this woman who I was just kind of head over heels in love with at the time, and really kind of felt that she had, in a way, sort of not given me a chance to sort of fully, how can I say this, to sort of fully show her the potential of what I could offer her in a relationship. So I mean, that sounds truly corny, but I guess at the time that's sort of what was going on in my head. And so she basically dumped me in a quite savage way, in a very unexpected way, which I won't get into. But I basically left her place, went to a gas station near her place, had to get gas, and was just sort of, while the gas was sort of going into my car, I just stood there completely kind of just like, I couldn't believe what had just happened. And having that feeling of just kind of being left in the dust, so to say, that was really the only way I could explain it, just having been left in the dust. And I just kept thinking, I would have waited. If the situation were reversed, I would have waited for that person to reveal their potential and to see what that person could truly offer. And I just started going through this list in my head of I wait for you, I wait for you. And while, you know, gas was going into my car, I just basically pulled out my writing journal and I just started making lists of I wait for you, you know, this, you know, for those born with a radarless heart. And I just kept writing and writing. And between that and then getting in my car and turning on my tape recorder, by the time I got home from being dumped, I pretty much had all the words written down for the song, kind of like Everywhere Is Love, by what you were mentioning earlier. I don't know. I guess when something inspires me to a really strong degree or another, I can, the words just literally fly out. And I'm sure you guys can relate with, you know, things that you do creatively. When something just truly strikes you in a certain way, you can, you know, you can't even hold on to your instrument. You know, you can hardly hold on to your instrument for the notes just flying out so fast or whatever. But that was how that came about for me. What I wanted to sort of throw out to both of you guys is the idea, and this is something we've sort of spoken about behind the scenes, how listeners, because what we do is sort of a hybrid of music, spoken word, ambient, and all these different elements, your thoughts on how listeners should approach this music, if they should approach it in any particular way, and also how you both approach what we do, because it's sort of different than, you know, other projects you might have done before. Either one of you can just step right on up.
Well,
yep. You go ahead, Tyson.
Bo, yeah. I mean, we were kind of talking about this the other night, but it's, it's a little bit, I know a lot of people say this about their music or projects they're in, but you know, the there's really no way to classify it, you know, that type of thing. Or I don't want to compare it to, you know, something, but on the We Voice Sing website, I think there's a lot of really great information there. And We Voice Sing is described as Massive Attack meets Kerouac, and that's definitely how I pitch it to people in elevators. But, you know, I understand that it can be a little difficult because it is this spoken word element. It is also traditional songwriting, popular music songwriting. And it is this trancey, ambient soundtrack music. And, you know, I think some people are like, well, you know, what is it? You know, and there's a little bit of a divide there, not saying I would change any of it. I don't think whether it's books or music, something's challenging and needs to be altered in any way. But the way I look at it is, you know, really just coming from this unique creative experience. I mean, you guys are very similar in a lot of ways creatively, but then you're also very different. You know, and I look at this project being just really interesting to sit back and watch how you guys work and what comes out of it. Sometimes I'm really just blown away.
Yeah. Bo, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, we met, Rich, you and I met with the, I guess we'd call her a publicist, I'm not sure, /publicist. And, you know, she gave us all kinds of sage advice, but one thing that really resonated with me, because we went through the same thing, you know, like, well, what are we? What do we want to be when we grow up? And you don't want to prejudice anybody by mentioning that, oh, it's sort of this meets that. If they don't like this or that, then immediately there's a bias. And so her suggestion, and I've kind of heeded her suggestion pretty much since we met with her on some other things, was not to give any kind of disclaimer and just be like, you know, just hand them a CD, say, or, you know, website or whatever, and say, well, you know, I could say what I think it is or kind of how we come to it or what it's like for me, but, you know, your experience is going to be probably unique and probably different. So, you know, you tell me. You know, tell me what you think it is, and or say nothing at all. And I won't say that, you know, one approach is better or worse. You know, it's just different. I'll say this, though, that when I stopped kind of warning people about, hey, this might be a little weird or, you know, this might not be what you're used to, when I just would kind of give them the music, I would always hear something back. And early on, that was one of the things that I think struck me, and I think it struck you too, Rich, was just kind of the lack of any kind of feedback. You know, when we put all this into the record and then we put it out there and we just didn't hear any, it's just like crickets. And so I found that when I didn't warn somebody off or give them any kind of, I don't know, any frame of reference whatsoever, that they would typically come back and, you know, for better or for worse, I mean, everything wasn't, you know, rosy and positive and, oh, it's awesome. You know, I didn't get, everybody wasn't that. But I feel like people were not afraid of it, as much as if I said, well, it's, you know, it's you know, a lot of people have, and I don't know if it's a certain, you know, kind of demographic that kind of can't get with the spoken word or sees that as kind of, you know, out of the mainstream or borderline counterculture or whatever, you know, however they see it, whatever bias they have. When I don't say that to people and I just kind of hand it to them, you know, I at least get some kind of feedback. So that's really the approach that I've taken is this, you know, it's like Tyson said, you know, everybody kind of says that, oh, well, you know, it's really hard to classify. And I think it's worth talking about that, you know, that's a real challenge too, you know, because there are plenty of folks kind of in the industry that really want to put you in a box. You know, they want you to be kind of this or that. They want to classify it. And, you know, for business reasons or for whatever, you know, their own, the music that you can easily kind of put in a box isn't necessarily interesting to me or kind of inspiring. You know, for me, I want it to kind of blur the lines, whatever those lines are. Like, those are the things that I find, you know, interesting and inspiring. And hopefully we do some of that. We blur some lines, you know, and I'll kind of leave it at that.
Yeah. You pretty much sort of voiced my opinion, but I'll just sort of reiterate. I think for myself, where I found myself sort of getting into trouble would be when I tried to describe our sound too much. I found that for me, the best way it worked was when I, like you said, Bo, I would just give people a CD and kind of let them just sort of make up their own mind and you know, depending on, and it was, it's, I never cease to be amazed. You know, I'll give a group of people a CD and each one will come back with something that, like a favorite track or two, and it's just wildly different. You know, someone will say their favorite track was like a one of the solo spoken word pieces, or one of, you know, someone will come back and say, you know, one of the harder tracks, like, you know, I Can't Quit You or Everywhere Is Love, or their favorite track. Someone will come back and say Butterfly Moon Bed, which is, you know, probably one of the more epic tracks, for lack of a better word, on the CD. Is one of their favorite tracks, and I like that. First of all, I think that's really interesting that people can sort of, when I just, again, you know, I was talking earlier about songwriting and being a musician and just trying to get out of the way of and serve the song, and I'm slowly but surely finding the best way I can serve We Voice Sing, besides the actual performing, as far as how to represent We Voice Sing, is to kind of just get out of the way and be quiet, you know, let the whole sort of less is more mentality, and let people draw their own conclusions about it. And yeah, because they're going to take something, they're going to take away something different. And I think that's one of the beauties of what we do. There's sort of a lot there, and people can find different ways into it. And I think that's really beautiful. And kind of like what you were saying, Bo, you know, it's as much as the industry sometimes wants you to kind of put yourself in a box or pigeonhole you, I would rather sort of veer away from that, because I think it's more beautiful when you let people just figure it out for themselves. Why don't we go ahead and play another track from the CD? This one is one called From Within to Without.
From within to without. From within to without. From within to without, through the world, beneath the land and sea, beneath the blood and bones and restless dreams of time. Time that binds, unites, makes chains of death and daisies we carry through our lives. In one moment, constrained, defamed, held captive by limitations, frustrations. Detonate the liberation bomb to blow away all those murderous manifestations. Without, dance the hard earth blues into something more soothing and fluid than celestial waters. Waters flowing over mountains into rivers, streams, and creeks. Through the intricacies, ecstasies, and failed diplomacies of brotherhood, unbrotherhood, yeah. Peace sign gone gun time. Gandhi transmogrified from social protest and purification. In the sound bites of manufactured lies, playing that number one with a bullet hit of annihilation, yeah. Forget that radio station.
Yeah, I say forget.
I say forget that radio station.
From within to without. From within to without.
There would not be me. The newly formed we, the genesis of eternal bliss. Fists releasing into openness. Collecting all the fragments of troubled lives, bringing them together to form brighter eyes. Brighter eyes to see that without we, there would be no drum, no song, no elation. Spontaneous creation.
From within to without.
That was From Within to Without from We Voice Sing, their debut CD of Wishbones and Gunfire. Gentlemen, I thought I would switch tracks for a second and ask you both, maybe Tyson, have you go first, your strangest or most humorous, most adventurous musical experience. It could either be something that happened while touring, in the studio, playing a live show, whatever. Tyson?
Well, I've had a few, but hands down, the most adventurous, I forget the other words that you use to describe this, but, you know, in 2008, I went to war zones in the Middle East and military bases in Europe and the Balkans, and played music with this Miami Dolphins cheerleader who started a band. in 2003. Yeah, she in 2003 went to Iraq with other Dolphins cheerleaders to dance on stage, opening up for I think Seven Dust. And while she was over there, she saw the band play and how people reacted, and was in her early 20s and was like, damn, this is what I want to do, and went back to the promoter and said, you know, I want to go back to L.A. and put a band together, and, you know, would you put me out on these kinds of tours? And the promoter was just kind of like, yeah, whatever, put a band together, let's see if it's any good. And she came back home and found as many musicians from other bands as she could, and wrote some tunes, spent a couple months putting this thing together, and passed it along, and they loved it. And then she spent about 5 or 6 years while the U.S. was over fighting, traveling around to bases and playing for soldiers and whatnot. So December 2007, Sweden refuses to sign the NATO treaty. Her guitar player at the time is Swedish, and the army says, no way is this guy going anywhere. And in a panic, a friend of mine was the bass player, that's how I was worked into the situation, said, well, you know, Tyson doesn't have enough time to grab a beer, but maybe he'll be down for this. And I get this crazy call saying, do you want to do two tours, one to the Balkans, Kosovo, Bosnia, and Serbia, and then another one to Iraq, Kuwait, Afghanistan, German bases, and Italy. And I immediately said, hell yeah, that's amazing. And at the time, my wife was pregnant with our first kid, and I came home and said, hey, guess what I'm doing?
Like, honey,
you're doing what? And you didn't even think to ask me if this was cool. So I went over there and did that, and it was just the most amazing experience for the bands that have done war zone playing. You know, there's nothing like being in 140 degree temperature, traveling by Blackhawk twice a day, 1,000 feet up from the desert, and people shooting at you and having mortar sounds coming at you from all sides, playing in front of people with blood-stained clothing.
Jeez Louise.
And, you know, doing that kind of thing. So that was definitely the most adventurous time I ever had, and people that hang around with me long enough get to hear all those stories, because once you get me started on it, I won't stop.
Wow. Bo, see if you can top that one.
I was going to say, anything I see is going to suck now. There's no way. Well, I should have gone last, Tyson. Damn, I forgot about that.
Sorry.
Wow, okay. No, never played in a war zone, unless you count DNA in Tampa. But I was like a couple of, I mean, like most musicians, I guess, that I know. I mean, I've been doing this for a long, long time, and you know, one of my first kind of real bands, and I say real because, you know, we wrote our own music and played our own music, and people were crazy enough to book us, even though they'd heard it. But we we had a singer at the time who worked at this club that was DNA. And so he found a way to weasel us onto any possible bill that you know, he could. And one of those bills was opening up for River Phoenix's band, Alakazatic. He, and if you know anything about River, other than the acting and the Viper Room mishap, he would tour in the summer with his family. They would all pile into a bus or a van and drive around the country and essentially, you know, play kind of town to town. It was sort of Happy Mondays kind of stuff, and you know, totally not a musical fit at all. But I got to hang out with him kind of for the day as we were kind of setting up, and eventually got to play the show. I mean, it was, you know, this club was just filled to capacity with girls there to see River Phoenix, and so we got to benefit a little bit from that and got to open. But what was great about it, and again, horribly inadequate, no bloodstained clothing or anything like that. This sounds terrible. And anyway, I was getting ready for the show, and I was tuning up, and I was, you know, not facing the audience. I was facing the drummer and talking about God knows what, and I just looked over kind of in my peripheral vision. I saw that the other people in the band were kind of looking into the crowd and had this just horrible expression on their face, and I'm thinking, well, you know, what happened? Did somebody pass out from the excitement that River Phoenix is in the building? And so I turn around, and it's my girlfriend at the time had driven down from college to present me with a box of all of the stuff I'd ever given her or reminded her of me or whatever to break up with me right before I played, at that point, like the biggest show I'd ever played. Like, you know, granted, I'm 20 years old, so I'm sure it was much more dramatic at the time. And, you know, living now and having done other things, it's just a funny story. But at the time, it was the greatest breakup ever. She handed me all that stuff. I'm standing there with guitar strapped on. I can't follow her, right? And she, like, runs out into the crowd. And, you know, that was it for me. It was like, wow, you know, well, whatever happens in the show, I mean, it's all, you know, it's all going to be downhill from here. This has to be the worst thing that happens all night. And ended up having a great show. And, you know, we're friends to this day and still laugh about it. And so that's my terrible, intense, not cool music experience. That's the best I got.
Right.
Oh, what was it that led up to that moment? That's crazy.
It was like music or me kind of thing.
Oh.
And I got the call, much less intense than, hey, let's go to Kosovo and play guitar. But, hey, let's open for River Phoenix's band. I got us on the bill. And like, hey, awesome. And it's like, well, if you go, you know, then we're done. And it's like, okay, can you grab that amp over there? And, you know, we'll load it up. But, no, obviously there was more to it. But it was just I got a lot of mileage out of that, some sympathy. I'm not ashamed to say. And, you know, if you can't kind of deal with sort of the music part, there were plenty of other issues. But my, you know, soon-to-be, well, after that, girlfriend and then wife always kind of embraced the artist and was, you know, not just cool about the music, but was really supportive. And as I'm sure, you know, Tyson, your wife is, and Rich, your fiance is, and I think that's a big part of what inspires me. Is, you know, you surround yourself with the people that are supportive and, you know, love you and love what you do, and it's not about, you know, monetary success or anything like that. They just, you know, want to support you kind of making your art. And so, you know, she clearly was not that. I'm happy to say I do have that now, but it's, you know, it's a funny story now to think about.
Yeah. I think one of my most memorable experiences, I was playing with that band Blue Movie that I mentioned earlier. We were on a 2-month cross-country trip, and we were like halfway into the tour. It was winter. It was like February. We were in New London, Connecticut, small little town, college town. We're playing at this bar. And they were paying us like $25 and a case of beer. And, you know, we couldn't drink the beer, couldn't get wasted because we were driving, and we had already had a problem with cops in the South. So we just were really gun shy about getting too wasted or anything like that. So we had to play 3 sets that night, and we were all just like sick and just, And my dad actually was at the show. He had been, for the Northeast section of our tour, because he was living in New Jersey at the time, he had a job where he traveled and he had an expense account. And so basically he followed us for a leg of the tour and was using his credit card for his expense account to take us out to eat and to get us hotel rooms. And basically just followed us from town to town for a little while. He was really into what we were doing and just got very excited about the whole idea of following this ragtag group around through the Northeast. And so we're in New London, Connecticut. Got to play three sets. We start asking ridiculous beer questions to the audience. It was a college town. The bar is packed with college students. We start asking silly beer questions to get rid of the beer. After the first – oh, and before we started playing, I got my dad drunk, which for him was like two or three beers. He's not a big drinker. So my dad's all tipsy. He comes up to me after our first set. He's like, "This is the best show I've seen yet. I want to ask a beer question the next set." And I was like, "Sure, Dad, I'll get you up on stage. You can ask a beer question." So, you know, we get up to play our second set, and I get up on the mic and I say, "You know, being in a band, we have, you know, we have this lifestyle where we get to go to different cities. We get to meet people that we wouldn't perhaps meet in our normal everyday life. We were just in New York City and, you know, we got a chance to meet someone who has had such a profound impact on our lives, on our creativity, someone we just truly adore. In fact, we hit it off so well, he decided that he wanted to come on tour with us for a little while. Anyway, without any further ado, please let me introduce to all of you William S. Burroughs." And the crowd goes fucking apeshit crazy. Everyone is like, "Burroughs, holy cow." And meanwhile, my dad is like, you know, walking out onto stage, completely oblivious to, he doesn't really know who Burroughs is. He's walking up to the mic to ask this beer question, and you hear the audience roar go from like, "Rah!" to like, the one guy who doesn't know what Burroughs looks like, because my dad looks nothing like William S. Burroughs. And so anyway, yeah. I just thought it was tremendously funny and was laughing my ass off. But anyway, I don't know how that translates now, but it was pretty damn funny at the moment. So, gentlemen, and or Bo, I guess this would be a question I would direct to you specifically. Think about maybe certain expectations that you might have had, and I know we've both discussed this before. Certain expectations you might have had in going into the studio about how you thought the CD would turn out, how you thought it might be received, and sort of to where we are now with things, and how, you know, certain expectations that have either been met or unmet, and then given all of that, you know, where do we go next? Sort of like, you know, what have we learned? What are the lessons learned kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, let me first and foremost say that, I mean, my expectations were probably exceeded in terms of sound. You know, we went through a couple of different producers trying to find the right person. Something people listening might not know is a lot of what you hear on the record was actually, you know, recorded and arranged and everything, you know, where I'm sitting now, kind of in my project studio at home. And then we used Grandma's Warehouse to bring in the live drummer and to, you know, do some other things that embellished and, you know, live tracking of guitars and bass and then obviously vocals. So I wasn't sure how that would sound, really kind of blending that. My goal, I guess, when we went through was I wanted something that was kind of more organic than electronic so that it had a little more warmth, I think, a little more meat probably than, you know, the raw tracks and what we had been kind of playing out for, I don't know, a year and a half or so before we went in to record, you know, and just far exceeded what I thought we'd be able to do. Just, again, props to Andrew Bush over there at Grandma's Warehouse and just the, you know, the list of great musicians, Tyson included, that came in and helped us out and kind of lended their interpretations and, you know, their tones and just, you know, brought the best of what they had. You know, really where, you know, the,
I couldn't have been happier with you know, hearing it and then mastering it with Howie, kind of sitting in his, you know, room over at Weinberg and listening to it through, I don't know, $80,000 speakers was just, you know, incredible, and all of that was really good. But I will say that one expectation that I had, and I don't know how realistic it was, so far it seems like it wasn't that realistic, was that the question we talked about before that we all kind of answered a different way, you know, what are you and what do you sound like and what does WeVoice sing exactly? I thought, okay, well, once we have something to hand people, it'll be much easier to you know, kind of find our audience, right, and find, in particular, booking, because what we enjoyed early on was, you know, we got to cash in on a lot of Rich's solo success, being a spoken word artist. He would constantly badger these folks about, you know, hey, you know, I also do a musical thing, and, you know, let's pull in the piano and we'll play, and got us into plenty of shows that I'm sure afterward the organizers were sort of scratching their head, like, why did we do that? Why did we agree to do that? Oh, it's because Rich is great. But, you know, my first, you know, played El Cid and played all these great places in town, and it was just like, this is so amazing, because, you know, the poetry circuit was so, you know, was so just accepting and warm and just, you know, loved what we do and seemed to be like, hey, we could go in there, we play a couple of tracks, and people are all into it, and just not at all kind of the environment I came from, you know, not just in Florida and points in between, but, you know, it's a very different thing. You know, it's not the music scene here in LA is, you know, it's very competitive. There are a lot of great acts out there, and we're all kind of competing for time on the various stages and the venues and things like that. And at the time, my thought was, okay, well, this is going to help us get over that, you know, that there's this divide between, you know, what we do and where we probably are best suited to play or not play in whomever's opinion. And, you know, we had played New York and San Francisco and all these other really, really cool places that I'd always wanted to play. And then I thought, well, I'll hand the record out and, like, that'll just increase exponentially. There'll be all kinds of opportunities. You know, we'll get up to Portland and we'll get to, you know, do all these shows. And then that did not happen, or it maybe hasn't happened yet. And, you know, we took it a step further. You know, we had our friend Ben Staley, great filmmaker and talented guy and all around, you know, awesome dude. He shot a documentary of kind of the making of what we did, and even kind of tacked on a little bonus, you know, music video at the end that just, you know, it's, you can see it on our website and Facebook and all that. But I thought, okay, well, then we'll go the you know, the film festival route, right? Like, we'll get in there. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing. Look at it. It's you know, what Ben does when he puts things together. I mean, it's like art, like every frame. Like, he sweats film the way we sweat music. Like, we're every measure. Like, okay, what are we doing here? He's every frame. Like, oh, how's this look? And just, you know, it's just the work of art. And, I mean, you know, unfortunately for him, he shot it of, you know, us. So, sorry, Ben, but thank you, Ben. I don't know, you know, what to do, like, to apologize or say thanks. But, right, and so I figured for sure between those two things that it would somehow expand the reach, that we might get to, you know, find it easier maybe to book shows. And it's been ironically the opposite, at least in my experience. It's been a lot harder now that we've got the CD and we have a little bit of a presence and, you know, we kind of do what we do and maybe a reputation that I'm not aware of, I don't know. But, you know, I guess that's been the biggest takeaway for me is that, you know, you do the record and you do the music because you love the music and because it's the, you know, the creative process has value. And, you know, I'm really happy with it. Your friend John would say I'd make that record again.
Yep,
I would make that record again. You know, it was the experience. It was pulling everybody together. All of those things were such big positives that, you know, that overshadows, I think, in my mind, maybe the downside or maybe my unmet expectation. They're like, hey, you know, this will be easier to book. It actually got a little bit harder to make that happen. So, you know, I don't know if that's really a lesson learned so far, but it certainly came out differently than I expected, at least in that aspect. How about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, sonically, kind of what you were saying earlier, sonically, I think it definitely exceeded my expectations. It's a truly lush and sonic CD, the musicians that we brought in, you know, Tyson, Butch, Peter Atanasoff, you know, all the background singers, Liz Castellan, you know, Joelle, you know, everyone just really just gave their all to support us and definitely elevated the music, did what they could to elevate the music. Andrew Bush, obviously, who helped to produce and engineer along with us. I think where I sort of got into problem, like earlier when I was saying, you know, I find, you know, when I was sort of trying not to explain too much about We Voice Sing, when I sort of would get out of the way of it and just let the music explain itself, I think where I have sort of run into some difficulties were, like you said, Bo, those expectations. I think, you know, I perhaps went into the whole thing thinking, yeah, you know, we're going to do this CD and X, Y, and Z will happen. And, you know, when those things either didn't start to happen or it was a real scramble to make some version of those things happen, you know, and this is like life in general, you know, you get certain expectations, you think something's going to go a certain way, and when it doesn't go a certain way, you get really disappointed, you feel let down or whatever. And, you know, I think the big sort of lesson learned takeaway for me is sort of what you already said, Bo, that idea of like, you know what, I just have to go back to that idea of I would make this CD again, I would, you know, I would bring in this same group of people again to make this body of music, to create this body of music, to create this body of work. I wouldn't do anything different. And, you know, it has brought me a lot of joy. I have something to show for it. And, you know, beyond that, it's just like, it kind of has to be what it is. And I have, you know, that has to be the joy in and of itself. And if something else happens beyond that, great. You know, just a cherry atop that already truly beautiful cake. So, yeah, I think I have to, you know, letting go of certain expectations, I guess, has been one of the greatest lessons for me, and just really appreciating the work for what it is and letting that be some of the greatest joy. That's definitely one of my biggest things right here.
Well, Rich, I think we might have somebody calling in. Are you there?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, well, if someone's calling in, if they want to, while you figure that out, Tyson, I just want to mention to people that might be listening, We Voice Sing is going to be playing this Friday night for all you people in the L.A. area. We Voice Sing is going to be playing this Friday night, December 6th, at Molly Malone's in Hollywood, which is located at 575 South Fairfax Avenue in L.A., zip code 90036. We'll be going on at 8:30 p.m.
ish.
We're going to be giving 8:30 p.m.
ish.
We're going to be giving away free copies of the CD, and we're also going to it's $15 at the door. But if you want to get into the show for free, you can contact Bo Blount, myself, Rich Ferguson. You can find me on Facebook. I'm the Rich Ferguson with the straw hat and not the Rich Ferguson, the magician. He is a great guy, but he's not going to get you tickets to the We Voice Sing show. So look for me. You could also get in touch with Tyson Cornell through Rare Bird Lit. Any one of us, if you give us your name, you can get into the show for free. If you want to bring a guest or a gaggle of guests, we can get your gaggle in for free too. Again, that's Molly Malone's this Friday night, December 6th, 8:30 p.m.-ish, 575 South Fairfax Avenue, L.A., 90036. Tyson, was that anyone calling in or someone prank calling us, or what was going on there?
No, it was actually Joaquin Phoenix that heard, you know, he heard Bo's story and said that he's going to be down there at Molly Malone's on Friday, too. So
nice.
And the ghost of William Burroughs will be there, too.
Also an excellent actor. In his own right.
Yeah. Well, I think we're getting close to the end of our time. Bo, besides the We Voice Sing website, wevoicesing.com, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'm also on Facebook. There is no
magician that shares my name, so it's just Bo Blount.
Right.
We Voice Sing is also on Facebook. We're on Twitter. It's at We Voice Sing. If you go to our website, though, that's probably the easiest because it'll email us directly. You just go to our contacts. It says on the website what to do. We really just need your name and how many people you want to get in terms of the show. But, you know, absolutely, if you're listening and you're interested at all in what we do, please, you know, reach out.
Yeah, and Tyson, why don't you give a plug for Rare Bird or how people can get in touch with you?
People can get in touch with me through rarebirdlit.com, RareBirdLit, short for literary. And we're just doing a whole bunch of good stuff. You know, if you're into books, books are about all kinds of subject matters, so there's usually something for everybody. And I'll probably bring a few of our new books to the show at Molly Malone's, just in case anybody's interested. Trying to keep the dream alive here.
Keep the dream alive, that's right.
Living the dream, baby.
That's right. Why don't we, well, first of all, why don't we, I'll have a few words to say after we play this last track, but let's head toward closing the show with another one of my favorite tracks from the We Voice Sing CD. This one is called I Can't Quit You.
I can't quit you, revolutions, revelations, oscillations. I can't quit you, earthquake weather. Bring the walls down now and never. I can't quit you, mayhem, magic. Sexy itch, gotta scratch it. I can't quit you, LA traffic. Push me, pull, you gotta have it. No.
Like And that was I Can't Quit You from We Voice Sing, their debut CD, I Can't, of Wishbones and Gunfire is the title of the We Voice Sing debut CD. Again, if you would like to attend the We Voice Sing show this Friday night, December 6th at Molly Malone's in Hollywood, contact Tyson Cornell through Rare Bird Lit or Bo or myself through the We Voice Sing website, and we will put you on the free list. We'll be giving away free CDs. Again, Molly Malone's is at 575 South Fairfax Avenue, LA, 90036. Bo Blount,
yes, sir.
Tyson Cornell, thank you both for being on the show today. It's been a true pleasure to hang out with you guys and chat and play some music.
My pleasure, man. I've been a fan of the show for a while, so I'm glad to finally get on.
And thank you, Tyson.
Apparently not a fan of the show. I don't know.
I want to send out a big thank you to our show sponsor for all your writerly needs. Please contact Tyson Cornell and the lovely Julia at Rare Bird Lit. You can find them online at rarebirdlit.com. Also, thanks to Tyson Cornell for production assistance with today's show. Poetescape's theme music is by We Voice Sing. You can find them online at wevoicesing.com. You can find debut CD of Wishbones and Gunfire on CD Baby, iTunes, Rhapsody, Spotify. You can find me, Rich Ferguson, online at WeVoiceSing.com, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. You can find my poetry collection, Eighth in Agony, on Amazon or at Punk Hostage Press. And after that long-winded announcement, thanks for tuning in to this special edition of Poetescape.